shrine, their cathedral. Somewhere in Becker's mind, a bell was tolling. Am I dead? Almost reluctantly, he opened his eyes and squinted into the first rays of sunlight. He knew exactly where he was. He leveled his gaze and searched the alley for his assailant. But the man in wire rims was not there. Instead, there were others. Spanish families in their finest clothes, stepping from their gated portholes into the alleyways, talking, laughing. At the bottom of the alley, hidden from Becker's view, Houlihan cursed in frustration. At first there had been only a single couple separating him from his quarry. Houlihan had been certain they would leave, but the sound of the bells kept reverberating down the alley, drawing others from their homes, a second couple with children. They greeted each other, talking, laughing, kissing three times on the cheek. Another group appeared, and Houlihan could no longer see his prey. Now, in a boiling rage, he raced into the quickly growing crowd. He had to get to David Becker. The killer fought his way toward the end of the alley. He found himself momentarily lost in a sea of bodies. Coats and ties, black dresses, lace mantles over hunched women. They all seemed oblivious to Houlihan's presence. They strolled casually, all in black, shuffling, moving as one, blocking his way. Houlihan dug his way through the crowd and dashed up the alley into the dead end, his weapon raised. Then he let out a muted, inhuman scream. David Becker was gone. Becker stumbled and sidestepped his way through the crowd. Follow the crowd, he thought. They know the way out. He cut right at the intersection, and the alley widened. Everywhere gates were opening, and people were pouring out. The pealing of the bells grew louder. Becker's side was still burning, but he sensed the bleeding had stopped. He raced on. Somewhere behind him, closing fast, was a man with a gun. Becker ducked in and out of the groups of churchgoers and tried to keep his head down. It was not much farther. He could sense it. The crowd had thickened. The alley had widened. They were no longer in a little tributary. This was the main river. As he rounded a bend, Becker suddenly saw it, rising before them, the cathedral and Giralda Tower. The bells were deafening, the reverberations trapped in the high-walled plaza. The crowds converged, everyone in black, pushing across the square toward the gaping doors of the Seville Cathedral. Becker tried to break away to a Mateo Scago, but he was trapped. He was shoulder to shoulder, heel to toe with the shoving throngs. The Spaniards had always had a different idea of closeness than the rest of the world. Becker was wedged between two heavy-set women, both with their eyes closed, letting the crowd carry them. They mumbled prayers to themselves and clutched rosary beads in their fingers. As the crowd closed on the enormous stone structure, Becker tried to cut left again, but the current was stronger now. The anticipation, the pushing and shoving, the blind, mumbled prayers. He turned into the crowd, trying to fight backward against the eager throngs. It was impossible, like swimming upstream in a mile-deep river. He turned. The cathedral doors loomed before him, like the opening to some dark carnival ride he wished he hadn't taken. David Becker suddenly realized he was going to church. Chapter 90. The crypto sirens were blaring. Strathmore had no idea how long Susan had been gone. He sat alone in the shadows, the drone of translator calling to him. You're a survivor. You're a survivor. Yes, he thought. I'm a survivor. But survival is nothing without honor. I'd rather live than die in the shadow of disgrace. And disgrace was what was waiting for him. He had kept information from the director. He had sent a virus into the nation's most secure computer. There was no doubt he would be hung out to dry. His intentions had been patriotic, but nothing had gone as he'd planned. There had been death and treachery. There would be trials, accusations, public outrage. He had served his country with honor and integrity for so many years, he couldn't allow it to end this way. I'm a survivor, he thought. You're a liar, his own thoughts replied. It was true, he was a liar. There were people he hadn't been honest with. Susan Fletcher was one of them. There were so many things he hadn't told her, things he was now desperately ashamed of. For years she'd been his illusion, his living fantasy. He dreamed of her at night. He cried out for her in his sleep. He couldn't help it. She was as brilliant and as beautiful as any woman he could imagine. His wife had tried to be patient, but when she finally met Susan, she immediately lost hope. Bev Strathmore never blamed her husband for his feelings. She tried to endure the pain as long as possible, but recently it had become too much. She'd told him their marriage was ending. Another woman's shadow was no place to spend the rest of her life. Gradually the sirens lifted Strathmore from his daze. His analytical powers searched for any way out. His mind reluctantly confirmed what his heart had suspected. There was only one true escape, only one solution. Strathmore gazed down at the keyboard and began typing. He didn't bother to turn the monitor so he could see it. His fingers pecked out the words slowly and decisively. Dearest friends, I am taking my life today. This way no one would ever wonder. There would be no questions. There would be no accusations. He would spell out for the world what had happened. Many had died. But there was still one life to take. Chapter 91. In a cathedral, it is always night. The warmth of the day turns to damp coolness. The traffic is silenced behind thick granite walls. No number of candelabras can illuminate the vast darkness overhead. Shadows fall everywhere. There's only the stained glass high above, filtering the ugliness of the outside world into rays of muted reds and blues. The Seville Cathedral, like all great cathedrals of Europe, is laid out in the shape of a cross. The sanctuary and altar are located just above the midpoint and open downward onto the main sanctuary. Wooden pews fill the vertical axis, a staggering 113 yards from the altar to the base of the cross. To the left and right of the altar, the transept of the cross houses confessionals, sacred tombs, and additional seating. Becker found himself wedged in the middle of a long pew about halfway back. Overhead, in the dizzying empty space, a silver censer the size of a refrigerator swung enormous arcs on a frayed rope, leaving a trail of frankincense. The bells of the Giralda kept ringing, sending low, rumbling shockwaves through the stone. Becker lowered his gaze to the gilded wall behind the altar. He had a lot to be thankful for. He was breathing. He was alive. It was a miracle. As the priest prepared to give the opening prayer, Becker checked his side. There was a red stain on his shirt, but the bleeding had stopped. The wound was small, more of a laceration than a puncture. Becker tucked his shirt back in and craned his neck. Behind him the doors were cranking shut. He knew if he'd been followed, he was now trapped. The Seville Cathedral had a single functional entrance, a design popularized in the days when churches were used as fortresses, a safe haven against Moorish invasion. With a single entrance, there was only one door to barricade. Now the single entrance had another function. It ensured all tourists entering the cathedral had purchased a ticket. The 22-foot-high gilded doors slammed with a decisive crash. Becker was sealed in the house of God. He closed his eyes and slid low in his pew. He was the only one in the building not dressed in black. Somewhere voices began to chant. Toward the back of the church, a figure moved slowly up the side aisle, keeping to the shadows. He had slipped in just before the doors closed. He smiled to himself. The hunt was getting interesting. Becker is here. I can feel it. He moved methodically, one row at a time. Overhead, the frankincense decanter swung its long, lazy arcs. A fine place to die, Houlihan thought. I hope I do as well. Becker knelt on the cold cathedral floor and ducked his head out of sight. The man seated next to him glared down. It was most irregular behavior in the house of God.
Enfermo, Becker apologized. Sick.
Becker knew he had to stay low. He had glimpsed a familiar silhouette moving up the side aisle.
It's him. He's here.
Despite being in the middle of an enormous congregation, Becker feared he was an easy target. His khaki blazer was like a roadside flare in the crowd of black. He considered removing it, but the white Oxford shirt underneath was no better. Instead, he huddled lower. The man beside him frowned.
Turista, he grunted.
Then he whispered, half sarcastically,
Llamo un medico.
Shall I call a doctor? Becker looked up at the old man's mole-ridden face.
No, gracias. Estoy bien.
The man gave him an angry look.
Puerte, andate. Then sit down.
There were scattered shushes around them, and the old man bit his tongue and face front. Becker closed his eyes and huddled lower, wondering how long the service would last. Becker, raised Protestant, had always had the impression Catholics were long-winded. He prayed it was true. As soon as the service ended, he would be forced to stand and let the others out. In khaki, he was dead. Becker knew he had no choice at the moment. He simply knelt there on the cold stone floor of the great cathedral. Eventually, the old man lost interest. The congregation was standing now, singing a hymn. Becker stayed down. His legs were starting to cramp. There was no room to stretch them.
Patience, he thought. Patience.
He closed his eyes and took a deep breath. It felt like only minutes later that Becker felt someone kicking him. He looked up. The mole-faced man was standing to his right, waiting impatiently to leave the pew. Becker panicked.
He wants to leave already? I'll have to stand up.
Becker motioned for the man to step over him. The man could barely control his anger. He grabbed the tails of his black blazer, pulled them down in a huff, and leaned back to reveal the entire row of people waiting to leave. Becker looked left and saw that the woman who had been seated there was gone. The length of pew to his left was empty all the way to the center aisle.
The service can't be over. It's impossible. We just got here.
But when Becker saw the altar boy at the end of the row and the two single-file lines moving up the center aisle toward the altar, he knew what was happening.
Communion, he groaned.
The damn Spaniards do it first. Chapter 92. Susan climbed down the ladder into the sublevels. Thick steam was now boiling up and around Translator's Hall. The catwalks were wet with condensation. She almost fell, her flats providing very little traction. She wondered how much longer Translator would survive. The sirens continued their intermittent warning. The emergency lights spun in 2-second intervals. 3 stories below, the AUGS generators shook in a taxed whine. Susan knew somewhere at the bottom in the foggy dimness there was a circuit breaker. She sensed time was running out. Upstairs, Strathmore held the Beretta in his hand. He reread his note and laid it on the floor of the room where he was standing. What he was about to do was a cowardly act. There was no doubt. I'm a survivor, he thought. He thought of the virus in the NSA databank. He thought of David Becker in Spain. He thought of his plans for a back door. He had told so many lies. He was guilty of so much. He knew this was the only way to avoid accountability, the only way to avoid the shame. Carefully, he aimed the gun. Then he closed his eyes and pulled the trigger. Susan had only descended 6 flights when she heard the muffled shot. It was far off, barely audible over the generators. She had never heard a gunshot except on television, but she had no doubt what it was. She stopped short, the sound resounding in her ears. In a wave of horror, she feared the worst. She pictured the commander's dreams, the back door in Digital Fortress.
the incredible coup it would have been.